Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, playwright Issa Davis chats with me about her new musical that tells a story of four teenage girls and a prestigious East Bay music program. Then, the Bay Area Book Festival's new theme inspires guests to write and reimagine a better future, and an immersive show in a San Francisco Victorian takes people back to the era of the 1906 earthquake. Today's theme is art that teaches us. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, right here on KALW 91.7 FM on this rainy Wednesday afternoon. Remember summertime when you were a teenager? Well, the play Girls, Girls, Chance, Chance, Music, Music is about four talented teens who spend their summer in Berkeley, California at a prestigious music program for girls. And the show includes themes of friendship, self-discovery, and how music helps many of us survive. Award-winning playwright, actress, and songwriter Issa Davis is the show's creator. Issa is originally from Berkeley but now lives in New York City. Girls, Girls, Chance, Chance, Music, Music is running at the ACT Strand Theater in San Francisco until April 19th. And joining me is playwright Issa Davis. Hey, Issa.
Hey, Janae. What's up? What's up?
Hey.
So good to be here.
I'm glad you're here. What's up? What's up is you and this play. But look, I just gotta give you some spotlight. I gotta big you up because
okay,
because not that you need it, but you've been in some.
No, I'm fine with that.
You're okay with that? Okay. This is it. Give me my props. You've been part of some of my favorite works, just artistic works. So I just wanted to share more about you. You played the mother in the Tony Award winning Broadway musical Passing Strange. You were a writer for the Netflix series that I love and hate that was canceled. She's Gotta Have It. You co-produced the concept album Warriors with Hamilton's Lin-Manuel Miranda. And that's been given so much buzz, which is inspired by the 1979 action film, not the NBA teams, not the Dubs, but the film. You're a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Your aunt is activist Angela Davis. And now you have this new show, Girls, Girls, Chance, Chance, Music, Music. So first of all, explain the title because it doesn't read like how I read it.
Right. So it's a repeat sign that you're seeing in the title, right?
Okay.
So the music nerds out there who read music will see that the word girls is between two repeat signs. So you would say it twice. And then the word chance is the same. And the word music is the same. So Girls, Girls, Chance, Chance, Music, Music is the technical title of the play.
Okay.
But of course, you know, we like to have a nickname. We can just call it Girls, Chance, Music.
Okay.
If that rolls off the tongue a little easier.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure I got it right. So
yes, either way is good. Either way.
Okay. Either way is good. Okay. And I understand you're from the East Bay. So what inspired?
Yeah.
What inspired this? And I have not seen the show yet, but what inspired Girls Chance Music?
Well, so many things. Yes. As you said, I am an East Bay native. I was born at Alta Bates Hospital in Berkeley, California.
Okay.
And went to Berkeley High. And while I was a kid, an aspiring piano student, I was introduced by a friend of mine who was in this music program on the UC Berkeley campus. And it was called the Young Musicians Program.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she talked about it and the way that, you know, I had heard other people talk about it, it just seemed like this place that I really would want to be part of, you know, a place that would be able to give me the kind of music instruction that would continue to like fulfill my dreams of becoming a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually lied. I was 9 years old. You're supposed to be 10 to audition. I was 9. I auditioned and I was playing classical piano. I think I played some Beethoven. And they let me in. I was 10 by the time I actually started the program. So I wasn't, you know, totally delinquent on that. But I stayed at that program through the summers from when I was 10 until I graduated high school when I was 17.
Wow.
And the program also had weekly lessons during the year and recitals then too. But I really feel that those days at the Young Musicians Program were some of the happiest of my life.
Oh, wow.
Some of the people who've come out of that program are Joshua Redmond, that saxophonist, Rafael Sadiq, as you all know from Tony, 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 and everything that he's done, of course, recently doing I Lied to You on the Sinner soundtrack with Ryan Coogler. So it's a place that, you know, has this true, it just reveals how the Bay always is at the vanguard, you know. We are always doing things that allows the world to follow us, you know? I think that that's how I was raised in the radical household. You mentioned my Aunt Angela, that's my mom's sister. You know, my mom and my stepfather, also activists. So the what inspired the play is just the love of music that was really nurtured in that program. And the thing that even if you weren't going to become a professional musician, that everything that you learned there would help you in the future. Having that kind of rigor, that kind of discipline, that sort of passion, that ability to collaborate, work in ensembles, perform every week with your etiquette. You know, you better come out there with your iron shirt or dress or skirt, whatever it was. And I just love everything that I learned there. And even though, you know, I didn't become a concert pianist, it has completely shaped everything that I do as an actor, as a writer. And my piano teacher there, Eugene Gash, he was so instrumental in really encouraging me and my musicality. He came from Denver, Colorado, and as a Black man, young Black man at the age of 19, made his debut in New York at Town Hall and then later played Carnegie Hall. And this was the man who was giving me lessons at this program. His teacher was a man named Mr. Schmitz, and Mr. Schmitz was taught by Claude Debussy, you know, that storied, beautiful composer. You know, we all know Claire de Lune, we all know his music, and that's the lineage that I was taught in. It wasn't just classical, it was pop, it was gospel, it was jazz, it was new music, experimental music.
And you do,
and so all of that inspires this play.
Yeah, and you do all of that in your work. And you know, we don't often see plays that center on teenage girls. And so that's why, too, when I learned about it, I was like, wow. And so I read that each show is shaped by something called chance music. What can you explain what is chance music and how does it shape the show?
Yes. So chance music allows for there to be an element of spontaneity that is going to change the piece. So how that functions in our play in Girls Chance Music is that the audience, 12 volunteers from the audience are led onto the stage, and they actually collectively create a melody. So they place a sticker on a certain note and then play it. And then another person will place a sticker on a note and play it until we have all 12 notes between G below middle C and F sharp above middle C until all of those are covered. And then we have what's called a tone row, something that is, if you think of composers like Schoenberg, who created this thing called 12 tone music, then we have a tone row of 12 notes. And then those notes that the audience has chosen, which is always going to be unique every single show, statistically, I mean, it's very, you know, like on the very edge of possibility that we would have the same one twice, but that would be really crazy. That melody is then incorporated by the cast in different scenes of the play. Wow. And they will sing the melody, they'll improvise with it. And it's just a really lovely way to see how music is always there, just like at our fingertips, and that we can make these new beautiful things together, you know, if we just try.
And let's dig into the story. So there's four characters, at least four main characters. Is it Clementine, Fax, Margot, and Riley?
Ryle. You got it.
Ryle. Okay. So tell us about these girls.
Well, they're very smart. They're very passionate about music, but they also are trying to determine what music means to them and what their approach to music will be. You know, everyone has their own takes on how it is that music is part of their lives. So, you know, there are some people who are going to be a little bit hard-nosed and type A about it, you know, that they just want to practice and get everything just right and perfect and accurate. And then there are some people who really want to explore and just be open to the moment and see what happens while they're playing. And then there are, I think there are people also who are a little bit in between that, who are really about practicing and that discipline, but also are really open to things happening in the middle of a performance or a rehearsal. And I think that kind of clash of style is something that really shapes the relationships in this play. And they're on their way to adulthood, right? So they're just trying to determine who they are. They're trying to really define their identities. And I think if you look back yourself, if you think about those summers or those moments in your childhood that really pivoted you, that really were formative, and then from that moment, something shifted, and then it sent you on a whole different path.
Right. I was going to ask you about that.
That's what this is.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, you know, because it takes place during the summertime. And I just remember as a teenager, summer was such a transformational time for teenagers, right? Because you're away from school. And you would notice when you would come back to school, you know, in the fall, you would notice how some of your classmates changed. Maybe their voices got deeper. They got taller. Yep. The nerd got cooler, you know, like, you know, you would see, like, people changing. So I wondered, I said, was it intentional that they were in this program during the summer?
Yes, very much so. I mean, and you just called it, because I can just think about how many people I knew, right, who they were one person in eighth grade, and then when you came back in ninth grade, they had a whole different look. They were, like, suddenly tan, you know, had some muscles or, you know, different outfits, hanging out with different people. And that's what it is. That's what, you know, adolescence is that you are trying out all of these different ways of being, you know, at a very fast pace. And I think that is what happens in this time at this school during the course of the play, is that even though it's a short amount of time, they're like, you know, asteroids hitting each other and making these huge impacts on each other that will affect them for the rest of their lives.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with playwright Issa Davis. Her show, Girls Chance Music, is running at the ACT Strand Theater in San Francisco until April 19th. Tickets are on sale now. And for folks on a tight budget, I did see some tickets in the $20 range. So, you know, take a few teens in your life with you to the show, you know, if you got the means for it. And we only have a few more minutes, Issa. But I was reading, you know, in the program, Lin-Manuel Miranda said that your writing, Issa, is exactly like yourself, soulful, insightful, and overflowing with an abundance of life. And he said, I never miss a new Issa Davis piece. And I was like, what a compliment from a colleague, not just because it's him and the success of Hamilton, but also too, just because for a colleague to even, you know, to have that much respect for you. And when you create, do you set out for your work to be, as he said, soulful, insightful, and full of life?
First of all, I'm just so, I still can't quite believe that Lynn is one of my closest friends. And, you know, the process of creating Warriors, which will be coming to the stage, that's something that we're in the process of.
Wait a minute, say it again. Okay, because people have been wanting this to come to the stage. You guys can listen to the concept album online. But people, when they heard the concept album, they were like, this needs to be on stage. So it is
on stage. That's right. We're listening to the people. We want to do what y'all want. So,
Congratulations.
But Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, Lynn is just infinitely generous and always is, as he says, he's trying to take up Stephen Sondheim's mantle and becoming the encourager in chief, trying to take care of everybody in the theater industry and community. And when he said that, he told me when he wrote that quote, he said it took him a long time to write it, which is kind of shocking for him. He writes very quickly. But he said it took a while to write it. And I think it's because he really sees me in like my full prismatic self. And when you asked about whether that's something that I attempt to do is always bring that soulfulness, I would say yes. I would say that that's so crucial to me is writing about human beings using the language of humanity, which are the arts, that music and theater and poetry and dance, all of these things are, they're the height of what we are as human beings. And I think that the more that we spend really understanding and appreciating culture, then and when we educate schoolgirls instead of bombing them, then I think that we actually come to the fruition, our true evolution as a civilization. I think it's all baked into the arts, and that the arts just make us better people. And so that's what this play isn't just about teens. It's not just for people who are femme presenting. It's for everyone who is able to take a look at their lives, look at themselves, and see how have I gotten here? What is it that I've dreamed, and how can I continue to just make this place a better place to live for all of us?
Well, Issa, I'm going to end right there, because that's a beautiful way to end this interview. You have to come back when you guys get Warriors on stage, because I'm sure
Yes, I would love
folks in the Bay travel, so I'm sure people will go out to
that.
New York to see it. Congratulations on everything. Congratulations on this show, and I'm going to definitely check it out.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Take care, Janae.
You too. Check out Issa Davis's show, Girls Chance Music, at the ACT Strand Theater in San Francisco, and it's running now until April 19th. Coming up, the Bay Area Book Festival's Executive Director, J.K. Fowler, is here to talk about why this year's festival's theme is important for our current times. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. One of my favorite times of the year to nerd out is approaching the Bay Area Book Festival, and I am currently, right now, as we're on the air, wearing my new Octavia Butler sweatshirt, and it says, Octavia tried to warn y'all. But anyway, this year's themes for the Bay Area Book Festival is Writing the Future. And actually, the theme was inspired by the legacies of Octavia Butler and James Baldwin. And there will be a ton of stuff to do for book lovers of all ages. The festival kicks off May 29th and runs to May 31st. And there are some big authors coming this year to the Bay. They always have really great authors. And I'm letting you guys know this all early so you can sign up and register for some of the different events they have going on. So, here to tell us what to expect is the executive director of the Bay Area Book Festival himself, J.K. Fowler. Hey, J.K.
Hey, Janae. Thanks so much for having me.
Anytime, anytime. You know, it's one of my favorite times of the year. I like cross it off my calendar. I was like, I have to be at the Bay Area Book Festival. Yes, and I wear theme stuff. So, and then too, just like a reunion too, because I see so many writers and good friends. So,
tons of people.
So last year, I interviewed you last year because I've interviewed you a gazillion times, and I was excited when you said this year's theme would be Writing the Future, because I love futurism. And so tell us again why this theme.
All right. Well, you already touched on it. So Octavia Butler and James Baldwin are sort of behind this year's theme. Butler is so amazing because she used speculation as strategy, and really showed through her works how marginalized people could organize, they could adapt, they can imagine otherwise. and that it's not inevitable, that we're actually writers of this future that we're.
And that's not just in Parables of the Sower. She did that in her other books too as well.
Many books, So, and the other thing I really appreciate about her work is that she's linking the climate crisis, authoritarianism, economic collapse, and she's countering that with community building and belief in something other than what they're experiencing, right? You know, Baldwin is so brilliant because he was an uncompromising truth teller in all of his works, and really believe that the transformation begins with an honest reckoning with the past, you know, race, sexuality, democracy itself, and really saw literature as civil rights work. And so, you know, I think of Notes of a Native Son, for example, his collection of essays where he's speaking to all of the issues that were facing us then, that we're still facing,
that we're still dealing with now. And he used to say, too, I remember I was watching a documentary, and he had issues because he, during the civil rights movement, he wasn't really out there marching. He felt, you know, his role was to document it all and kind of what you were saying and write it. And that was his role. So, you know, for times like this, everybody has a different role, you know, when it comes to progress.
Well, and one of his, you know, guiding beliefs was that a future requires a confrontation with what we'd rather not see. Right. And so we're in this other moment of we have all of these things that we're having to confront about our past with the question of how we move forward.
So, I love that. Say that again. A future is?
A future requires a confrontation.
With what?
With the past.
With the past. With the past. Yeah. And we're living in an era of book bans, protests, people of color being detained, wars, genocides around the world, technologies threatening to take human jobs, you know, and some of this stuff has happened long, long, long time ago. It's been going on for a long, long time already. And it's just really feel like it's intensified now. And JK, you said something in a press release that I thought was really beautiful. You said dreaming is not escapism. It's resistance and it's strategy. And I'm thinking we're, you know, this is a festival with authors, with people with imaginations. Talk about the importance of the writer's imagination today.
Yeah, I mean, I really see literature as an infrastructure for movements, that it's not just entertainment. Mm-hmm. So, it's not art for art's sake, you know, that it's not floating above history and politics, but that it's all like deeply imbued with that, right? And so the imagination, the writers that we're inviting in are crafters of ulterior futures and, you know, alternatives as we look forward. And from the youth lit, you know, opportunities on Saturday to, you know, the writers' workshops are happening on Saturday to, I mean, I'll go into all that.
Yeah, definitely, because I definitely want to hear, you know, just what you guys have coming up. But I still want to talk about the concept of this theme. When we're thinking of dreaming and, you know, as a form of resistance, and I recommend people read Trisha Hershey's book, Rest is Resistance. But where is the reader in all of this? You know, so you have the writers out here. They're trying to reimagine. You have our future Octavia Butlers and James Baldwin, people inspired by them. And they're writing, reimagining the future, right? And also, too, they're writing about the things that people don't want to face that's happening. And so where's the reader in all this? The reader in how we progress, a reader, where's the reader in all this and how we write the future, how we reimagine the future?
I mean, it's a great question. I think of myself as a young reader and sort of a voracious reader of a lot of different types of texts. Mm-hmm. And I remember those beautiful confrontations with those texts and the ones that like shook me to my core. Mm-hmm. That dared me to see things in a slightly different way or introduced ideas that hadn't been brought to me before. And so there's a sort of like explosion of ideas that happens, especially at a festival, which is really a beautiful construction of a commons where we're having multiple conversations across different platforms about different things. And so I think the role of the reader is to have those beautiful confrontations, to take the chance to read, especially works that you may not have come across before, and to encounter ideas that may not be within your immediate sphere. And so I think the festival offers that in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I was like, I'm challenging myself this year to not just go to authors that I want to see, but to maybe go to to panels whose work maybe I wouldn't read, you know, and just to learn something. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with J.K. Fowler. He's the executive director of the Bay Area Book Festival, which runs May 29th to May 31st in downtown Berkeley. And you can visit baybookfest.org to check out their calendar and RSVP for workshops and talks, which is why I have him on almost, you know, over a month early before the festival. So you guys can go on and sign up for workshops, but leave some for me because I need to sign up too. Okay, J.K., this is big because I went to the event that you had where you announced the lineup. And I was, JK, this is funny. I was there so long, you left before I did. And I said, this is JK's part. I turned around, I was running my mouth, and I was like, they took down the Bay Area Book Festival sign. I was like, I think I'm overstaying my
wine. That wine was tasty.
Hey, I took advantage of my drink ticket. And where was that at again? It was at in Berkeley?
Donkey and Goat Winery. They're actually a wine sponsor of the festival.
Okay, shout out to Donkey and Goat Winery because I had a good time. Too much of a good time. But look, so you guys are going to have 300 authors and speakers with more than 120 programs, 21 stages, an estimated 25,000 attendees. So tell us, JK, who is on the line up?
I mean, I cannot go through all of them. I'm going to start with the headliners. So these are the ticketed events. 96% of our events are free and open to the public.
Okay.
The only five events that are ticketed and cost something starting at $20 are the headliners. So.
And these are big headliners because I saw them, yeah.
So our opening headliner on Friday night is Nnedi Okafor and Marshall Ganz in Conversation. And Walida Imarisha is the moderator for that. And so one of the beautiful things about our festival is we get to experiment and we get to have these amazing mashups. Like Marshall Ganz has for sure never been in conversation with Nnedi Okafor.
Yeah.
But I found out the other day that apparently he's a huge science fiction fan. So I think some amazing things are going to happen at that. And that's at the Freight. We also have Rebecca Solnit, who is going to be in conversation with Saul Williams. Again, that conversation has never happened before.
Okay, I see y'all are being experimentative.
Very excited
and
about
Saul
that.
And Saul Williams, who was just phenomenal, legendary poet. He was just in Sinners. He played, if you watch Sinners a million times like I did, he played the father. He played Sammy's father in Sinners. He was beautiful in that film. Played the preacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he has a new book out called Martyr, Loser, King, and it's a cyberpunk fable.
Oh, wow. And Martyr, Loser, King. Okay.
Yeah. And Rebecca Solnit has a new book out as well. So they're going to be in conversation. We have Black Feminist Futurescaping. That is an amazing combination of Alexis Pauline Gums and Susanna Morris, who has a new book out with about Octavia Butler.
Oh, yeah. And, okay.
That's being moderated by Sista Sci-Fi.
Oh, my goodness. I already spent $100. Go ahead.
And then for spec fic and horror fans, we have Stephen Graham Jones in conversation with Tana Nariv Dewey. That's moderated by a local Oakland writer, organizer, Ayize Jama Everett, amazing writer.
Oh, my goodness. And Tanana Reevdu, huge, huge horror writer, just won, did she win a Hugo? She's won all kind of rewards.
Tons of awards.
Yeah, for The Reformatory, which is a very powerful book that came out. Anyway.
Yeah. And then finally, we have Publishing the Future, which is all about publishers that are doing innovative and interesting things to kind of push publishing as an industry forward.
Okay.
So we have Hannah Moshebeck, who's with Interlink. We have Phoebe Robinson, who's Tiny Reparations Press.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Cynthia Leitich Smith, who is with Heart Drum. And we have Kate Gale from Red Hen Press. And
then
that's moderated by the co-CEO of Ant Loot Press in San Francisco.
So this is yeah, because especially right now, publishing is having an experience.
It is.
Yeah. that's a light way of saying it.
It is.
Wow. That's a lot.
So those
and
are
that's just the headliners.
Those are just our headliners. Those are the five ticketed events. The tickets went on sale Saturday at the event you were at. So if you're interested in any of those mashups, definitely visit our website for that.
Yeah, and there is a ton of panels. I was going through some of the panels. And also, too, there's writing workshops, right?
There's 15 writers workshops, so we've increased that. I mean, one of the really exciting things is we're back to pre-COVID numbers.
Okay.
And so we have 15 writers workshops. It's at the Brower Center in Berkeley.
Okay.
It's three theaters that are concurrently, you know, busy with free and open.
And the Broward Center is nice. The Freight is nice. So these are really nice locations.
Really nice locations, all in the same footprint. So, you know, you really can just bounce between things, too, if you just want to catch, you know, a bit of this, a bit of that. So the writers' workshops are free and open. We just require an RSVP for that. So definitely visit those, too, and grab your spot for those.
Yeah, definitely for people who are interested in a writers' workshop, I know those go quickly. So definitely if that's something that you want to sign up for, you want to jump on that.
Just some highlights from the writers' workshops. We have speculative storytelling, it's collective resistance, how to find and create your literary community, how to become an audiobook narrator.
You know, I'm going to be at that one.
We have a teen poetry workshop with You Speaks, based here in San Francisco,
and
Gabriel Cortez. So,
he's great. Gabriel is great.
There's just so many amazing offerings.
Yeah, and again, like I said, for all ages. And I'm excited for the kids because superstar librarian Michael Threets.
Yeah.
The new host of Reading Rainbow is going to be there.
He's going to be there. Youth Lit is our youth-focused, youth and family-focused programming. And it's this year we've expanded that as well. So we have it all day Saturday at the Berkeley Central Library.
I went last year. Those kids were turned up. Those kids, I went there last year. I said, there was so many kids, which is good. You know, so if you have kids, trust me, Those kids were very excited and they had a good time.
And we have, this year we're going to have the streets closed right outside the library. So we're going to have 20 exhibitors with activities for families and youth too.
Nice.
And then on Sunday, we have two youth focus stages in Civic Center Park.
That's great. So kids can see and young people can see other young people
on both
performing.
Days.
Yeah.
On both days. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a ton of things to do for the family and for the kids. Anything you're excited about in particular? We got like a minute and a half.
Yeah. I mean, I want to give a shout out to the Bushwick Book Club. Oakland is going to be doing musical intros for all of our headliners.
Okay.
And I just want to give some love to the musicians that are coming.
So there's going to be live musicians for the...
Yeah, we did this for the first time last year, and we're going to do it again. So
okay.
As an intro to the headliner, before the headliners actually start their conversation, there's an amazing live performance where a musician has written an original music piece to one of the books of the speakers on stage.
Wow.
And it's the first time the speaker on stage will experience the music, and it's this beautiful moment for both of them.
Oh, so, look at all that art, literature, and music.
Yeah,
beautiful.
We have Selena Feliciano is going to come through, Kevin Goldberg, Origin Stories, which has two members. We have Tristan Marcel, and we have Joyous Dawn, and so they're going to come through to do that.
Wow.
So we're really excited to have the Bushwick Book Club Oakland with us again.
That's love. And you all work so hard, you know, and I know so many people who are part of your team, and you all work hard all year to put this on. So just if anything else you want to mention before we wrap this up?
You know, really just, I mean, to drive home that 96% of it's free, and if there's ways of you supporting us, you know, you can find out ways to do that on our website. That's the only way that this stays free. About 85% of our annual budget is from contributed income, like donations. So definitely want to welcome that support, and definitely want to welcome any and all to come through to the festival. The dates, really important, May 29th to May 31st, downtown Berkeley.
Yes.
Alston Way is sort of the center of it.
Right by BART. I might get a hotel room because I might just be doing a whole lot. We'll see, though. Because there's so many things I want to see, and I know some of it goes late. So, JK, thank you for organizing all of this. Thank you to your team, and thank you for coming through and letting us know what we can expect and getting us all excited.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me.
JK Fowler is the executive director of the Bay Area Book Festival, and the festival kicks off May 29th in downtown Berkeley and runs through May 31st. We'll have a link to the festival schedule on KLW Sights and Sounds page. Next up, a show in a San Francisco Victorian transports audiences back to the 1906 earthquake era. Stay with us. You're listening. listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, here on KALW 91.7 FM. And I hope you are warm and dry in this rainy weather. This month marks the 120-year anniversary of the 1906 earthquake. About 3,000 people died in the estimated 7.7 magnitude quake. And that's according to the United States Geological Survey. But often there are miraculous stories that come from devastating moments. So as fire ravaged San Francisco the early morning of the quake, a family watched from the roof of their Victorian mansion, but the flames stopped one block before their home. And that home exists today, and it's the location of a show that's coming up that recognizes that period of Bay Area history. And it's called Earthquake, Shaken But Standing Strong. And it's an immersive historical show and tour of the surviving, I hope I pronounced this right, Haas Lilienthal House. And here to tell us more, and will correct me if I say it wrong, is someone who is a visual performing artist. And this person knows, honey, how to turn a house into an unforgettable, entertaining experience, and that is Mr. Gregangelo Herrera. Welcome, Gregangelo.
It's great to be here, and you said the name just fine, better than I say it.
Okay, I was about to say, I know you know how to say it. Yes, I met you several weeks ago when I visited your home, the Gregangelo Museum, and that was one of the coolest, unforgettable places I've been. I was saying to JK, who was on the show earlier, I was saying to him, you cannot leave Earth. You cannot take your last breath without going to your home. And it was like walking through a rainbow portal, and you end up in a world that reminds you of Alice in Wonderland, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. One room kind of felt like Star Trek. And you're just so creative. Where do you get your creative style and spirit?
You know, I was born in San Francisco in 1966, and this is just what I was meant to. I'm just living my honest life.
Okay.
And I'm here, and I love the city, and I love people like you and everybody I meet every day, and that's what I do for a living.
Yeah.
And that house was a complete accident. It was just a passion project that became what it is today. You know, it's fascinating to me, really.
It is. Because yeah. I was like, how do you even stand it?
I love it.
I know, because I would just be like, I'm in love with this so much. I really recommend people to go. It's really spectacular, and it's beautiful, and like, you know, and the way you all do it, it's done with so much love, you know. So I know I said Charlie and Chocolate Factory and Alice in Wonderland, which can be traumatic stories, but I'm just saying the image of it, but the experience when we go to the Gregangelo Museum is just, it's love.
Well, life is traumatic, and I think that's a good segue into this 1906 earthquake, 120-year commemoration, right?
Which is a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, what's interesting is that the Gregangelo Museum, which is my house, which has now become a San Francisco historic landmark, is also home of our entertainment company, originally Velocity Circus, which is now Velocity Arts and Entertainment. So it's this dual entity. And we've also recently become a legacy business. The reason I say this is because the Haas Lilienthal House is the only other house in San Francisco that shares the same sort of double DNA legacy, where they're also a historic landmark, a legacy business. They're also a national treasure.
They're a national treasure. So tell us more about this house. That's what I wanted to ask you about.
Which one?
We're gonna have you back on, because we're gonna do a piece on Gregangelo's home. So we're not gonna go too in depth there. But yes, we're talking about the Haas family. So the Haas Lilienthal House. Tell us more about this place.
Well, it is a Victorian mansion on Franklin Street. If anyone who's ever written or rode or take the bus down Franklin, you've gone by it. Lower Pacific Heights.
Okay.
Like you said earlier, it survived the 1906 earthquake. The family that lived there still carries a legacy in San Francisco today. They were the early sort of merchants of San Francisco. Okay. San Francisco had no food. There was not much sustenance. It was a big old sandbar. And they were feeding San Francisco. Today, we can trace that lineage to Smart and Final, which is a wholesale grocery store that I still shop at.
Yeah, I do too. Okay.
Yeah, and that's definitely a direct legacy of the Haas Lilienthal. It's the Levi's family.
And Wells Fargo, too, bank, right?
I'm not sure.
I thought I read so. Okay.
You could be right. I'm
Fact
not.
Fact check.
We'd have to. So the Haas Lilienthal House is run by SF Heritage, San Francisco Heritage, which is basically a civic entity that makes sure that the culture of San Francisco and all the landmarks are protected.
Okay.
And neighborhoods as well. So they have a big job. Okay. So both of us are these sort of double DNA things. But you know, and they still use, the family still uses the house every Christmas Eve.
Really?
Every Christmas Eve, okay. They still use it.
Yeah. Wow. So this is a family that's over, you know, 100 years.
Yeah, late 1800s when it was built.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's a mansion, right?
It's a Victorian mansion, completely intact. The only damage it sustained during the Great Quake of 1906 was a crack in the stairwell, which they left to never forget that day. And
wow. You
can see that crack today.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Okay. So tell us what to expect with this show, because I looked on the website and I saw a lady dressed up like the Golden Gate Bridge.
Okay.
So I said, what is this?
All right. Well,
we got, I mean, what is this?
Well, you know, you've been to my house. You have to have a little spectacle.
Right, of course.
So it's a hybrid show. So I'm known for doing kind of spectacle shows, but immersive theater that are very evocative. You're
okay.
going to feel it. I'm not just going to show you something. You're going to feel it. So it's in three parts. We're going to welcome you into the main entrance of the house, which isn't typical when you do the tours there. Typically, you go through the basement.
Okay.
We're going to bring you as if you're coming to a cocktail reception into the house. In the contemporary time, people can come as they are, dress up, whatever. Mm-hmm. We don't want to exclude anybody.
Okay.
So you're going to come into the house, and there'll be sort of a champagne reception for a half hour. We have a pianist playing who happens to be a two-time Emmy Award-winning
nice.
Writer who wrote much of the music in the show that we'll present later.
Okay.
A couple characters moving around. Sam Jackson, who's a local San Francisco actor I've worked with for many years. I recently just saw her in a play that was about Martin Luther King's last hours alive.
Oh, okay.
And it was just a two-person show, and she was amazing, and it reminded me, like, I need to start working with her again. So she's taking a role in this. And there'll be some of our artists in residence from the Grand Angel Museum sort of doing a little bit of immersive. It's not super theatrical.
Okay.
It's basically getting you seated with a lot of entertainment.
Okay.
And then we're partnering with SF Heritage to do sort of a 10-minute historical presentation about the earthquake, what really happened.
Okay.
And then that's where I step in, and we're going to do a dramatic presentation of what happened. And the work I do kind of combines neuroscience, music, storytelling to actually take you back to that moment. And it was grim. So it's not something to celebrate. And I've been saying in our box office, this is for mature kids 12 and up,
okay.
I think would be good for. I don't want to steal the age of innocence from anybody.
Right.
We've been getting questions, but it's definitely a great date night, a family show. We're doing one evening show and two matinees that basically bookend the time that this 45-second quake, which destroyed the city, actually happened.
That's a long quake.
It's a long quake, and it was devastating. So we're going to take you through the devastation, and it's going to be quite evocative.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll take you through that, and then through music and song written by Rita Abrams, who will be there. We're going to bring you back through a timeline of the city from then until today, realizing that it's everybody in the room that really is the history of San Francisco and
wow.
where they are right now. And then there's a little comic relief where you see the Golden Gate Bridge. So that's
okay.
There's a very extraordinarily intelligent song that personifies the bridge as sort of the Grand Dame of San Francisco. And so we take you from sort of grief to humor
okay.
in the arc of this, you know, maybe 20-minute sort of performative section of this three-part show.
Okay.
You also get to be in the main entry hall in the parlors of the show, so you're really immersing in it. There'll be docents from the Lilienthal House there to give you a little bit of history of it. And then following the show, we're going to break the we only have 60 guests. So it's an intimate show.
Okay.
We'll break the groups up into 20 people at a time, and the docents will lead you into the private chambers of the family, exactly where they were sleeping during that earthquake, and share some stories of what happened during that time. And we'll be entertaining the rest of you, and the groups will get to go through it. So it's a three-part immersive journey.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with visual and performing artist Gregangelo Herrera. You can check him out along with his fellow castmates at Earthquake Shaken But Standing Strong on April 17th and 18th at the Haas Lilienthal House in San Francisco. The tour and entertainment of the house is in honor of the 120th anniversary of the 1906 earthquake. You know, I just kind of want to piggyback off of what you were just saying. There was so much devastation, again, as a result of that earthquake, but also, too, there's a story of hope because this family survived, this house survived, you know, and I'm hearing you saying, we're gonna tackle the devastation, the sadness of it. So I mean, a lot of people died. Thousands of people died.
It was gruesome.
It was, yeah. If you look at, you know, old pictures and videos, yeah. San Francisco was just flattened.
But the human loss was gruesome.
Right, and the human loss was gruesome. Yeah. And you can see that just in all, like, how the buildings and the fires, because buildings were made of wood back then. So, but you also make the show entertaining, and there's also some hope. So, you know, talk about that balance of why that was important, to have that balance to show the loss. To show the trauma of it too, but also to show the hope and the resilience. Because now we look at San Francisco today, you know, 120 years later, right?
It's a great question. So it really, in this 45 seconds of total devastation, we saw San Franciscans, whoever was here at the time, in moments of complete unadulterated solidarity where people helped each other, including the family in this house. It didn't matter who you were, what age you were, race, color, culture, creed. Mm-hmm. People got up and helped each other. And within, I want to say, 8 or 9 years, the city was rebuilt. The Pan Pacific Exposition was here. The Palace of Fine Arts is what's left over from that. And including, there's one statue people don't know about called the Star Maiden, which is at One Sansom right now.
Okay.
Was one of the statues from the Temple of the Universe from that particular thing. And it's, so these are great symbols of not just hope, but accomplishment and acceptance in San Francisco. You know, that was a natural disaster. Now, move forward to today, this moment. We're experiencing a man-made disaster, what's happening in humanity right now, our ecological, our sociopolitical. It's a disaster. It truly is, looking at it objectively, standing back. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is bringing you to this arc of this wonderful solidarity that happened and showing you that in this moment, we can do the same.
Yeah.
We can be better. We can uplift each other. So that's really the arc of the experience. It's not just history. It's taking us to this moment.
Yeah.
And the moment we're in that room.
You know, and you're a lifelong San Franciscan, and you've seen so much history here in this city. You talked about growing up in the 60s, the 70s, 80s. I mean, so much. San Francisco, it's always so much going on here. And I'm looking at this event. You know, what does it mean for you to recreate and tell such an important moment of the city's history?
Well, it feels great because I've lived some of it. You know, I was really coming of age in the 70s when there was so much going on in San Francisco. We were little kids out in the streets by ourselves and seeing, you know, the queer movement, the feminist movement, the civil rights. Everything was coming together. Every kook and every cult was out on the streets, and we were real savvy. So I love this city. Every morning I wake up and I roller skate everywhere, and I'm always going to different.
I remember you said
yeah,
that.
I go to different neighborhoods, and I'm just like, this place is a miracle. It's a miracle, and it's not. It's the people in it. It's the stories that you hear every day. So I about 20 years ago I wrote a show that was a full on musical theater experience with Circus Arts. That was about the 100th anniversary of the quake. Up to today, and we looked at it through the lens of a very conservative couple that was traveling for the first time and happened to land in San Francisco. And it was an odyssey. It turned out to be an odyssey of what happens when somebody who doesn't know much about life and people show up. And that was our story of San Francisco, where they come and they're guided by Miss Dolores Park, who was our resident drag queen, and they weren't really having her in the beginning. Okay. And we personified the Golden Gate Bridge as Miss Gigi Bridges and the Bay Bridge as Bazy, who was this, you know. he was bi-level. And we tell some stories. And we shared some stories. And through the arc of the Odyssey, this conservative couple breaks out into song at one point, which was about the culture of the city. And this is also written by Rita Abrams, who is brilliant.
Okay.
And it was a song about the food of San Francisco. They were coming from, like, New York, where they eat at delis. And she talks about, you know, 100 different cultures where you can get food when they're hungry. And they're like, the punchline was, but there's not one decent deli in this town, which is true, right? So it's because it really is a melting pot, but it's a place of acceptance too.
Well, you can get some good banh mi sandwiches.
Oh, you can get anything. You can just
you can get anything.
You can get anything.
Okay. So what's your role in this current show? And like, what are you doing? Are you producing all Earthquake Shaken, but standing?
Yeah, I'm doing? I'm producing it and directing, and I'll be there in person probably as a character playing myself, just to kind of get people comfortable and in the mood. And if the grimness of it triggers anybody, we'll be there to kind of help out because we use a lot of, well, you just experienced our place at Greg Hunsworth Museum. We do a lot of kind of neuroscience storytelling that could trigger people. It's very truthful and honest and to the core. I don't sugarcoat anything.
Okay.
But we are going from that kind of grimness to kind of a sugarcoated.
Okay. Okay.
Part of the arc. So part of the arc of the experiences I do is we want to make sure that there's, if we're going to scare the heck out of you, there's going to be laughter soon after.
Yeah. You know, but I think that's, you know, right now, I mean, people are experiencing that now, right? I mean, there's so much
fear
and grimness that you have to, you know, that saying, you got to laugh to keep from crying, you know, and sometimes you got to bring that in. And I usually tell, sometimes I tell our listeners to take some time to look at something beautiful in the midst of all this mess.
Well, that's what this is. That's exactly what this is. And, and that's where we're going to take you there. We're going to show you grimness can be joy. You know, I've got to say, though, you know, going to the, just seeing how people are dealing with it, there's been such grief, but people are joyfully protesting, and I see a lot more people singing and dancing and music on the streets, and the arts and culture of anywhere in the world right now are very, very important. Even in these cultures where they're being bombed, you still hear music and dance just to get through whatever moments are left in those lives.
And that's what humans have been doing
forever. It's our gift.
Yeah. When you look at movements, there's always the song, there's artwork.
Always.
There's something.
Yeah. It's the goal. When you look at history, what are they looking at?
Right. Exactly.
The art.
The art. It's in a book. That's art.
Exactly.
Right?
That's all. The writing. Right.
Before we go, quick question. What is your, we had like about 15 seconds. What is your art? Because you said circus. You do circus.
Well, I started an ethnic dance. I was a whirling dervish, moved to circus arts, and now my art is literally other artists. I like to see other artists succeed, so I'm an artistic director, and though I'm still performing and doing things that are age appropriate, I would say it's working with this extraordinary group of multicultural, multi-generational artists in San Francisco and producing these type of shows.
Okay. Yeah. Well, like I said, you know how to turn a house into something, so I know, I'm sure it's going to be an experience. Greg Angelo, it is always a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much.
Can't wait to see you again.
Yeah. You know I'm coming through.
Good.
We'll talk about that after the show. All right. Greg Angelo Herrera is a visual and performing artist. You can check him out along with his fellow castmates at Earthquake, Shaken But Standing Strong on April 17th and 18th at the Haas Lilienthal House in San Francisco. And that's all the time we have at the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, and our board operator, Damien Miner. And thank you for tuning in. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.